If you're above a certain age, you probably recognize that sound. If you're my age or younger, you might be like, what is going on right now? But if you know it, you might be able to cite the tagline, you are now entering the Twilight Zone, a place of fantasy, suspense, drama, the middle ground between the pit of man's fears and the summit of his knowledge. A wondrous land whose boundaries are that of imagination. Raise your hand if you watch The Twilight Zone or reruns of The Twilight Zone. Okay, a bunch of us. So this morning we're going to talk about something that has some similar elements to The Twilight Zone. We're talking about an important zone, somewhere that might be unfamiliar, might be confusing, it might be scary. And the zone that we're going to talk about this morning is the growth zone. Okay, so maybe you just want to hear that like playing in the back of your mind as you think about the growth zone. We're talking this morning about how God wants to use us and how he might call us to serve in ways that are outside of our comfort zones and more like a growth zone for us. So as you saw, our theme for this series is Christ's hands and feet in our world, which is the second half of our mission statement here as a church. We want to be serving God, whether that's within our church community, within our E-Town community, whether that's around the world. We want to be doing the things that Jesus would do and serving the people that Jesus would serve. And so we've had a few sermons these past few weeks kind of laying a theological framework for why we serve, what that looks like. We serve because Jesus served. Jesus left heaven and came to earth, and part of his plan to save us was to become a servant and a suffering savior, and he died and made himself nothing in order to save us. So we serve because Jesus served, and we follow his example. We learned last week we're most like Jesus when we are serving, and we learned that our job is to imitate Jesus so that we can say to other people, imitate me as I imitate Christ. So we serve because Jesus served, we're most like him when we are serving, and because our church is most engaged in its mission when every generation serves as Christ's hands and feet in our world. So that's kind of the overall framework, and we're going to dive into some more specifics today of what that might look like. What does serving look like when God is calling you to something that might be outside of your comfort zone? And so this morning, we're going to do that in the form of kind of a case study. We're going to talk a little bit about my life and experience in calling into ministry. We're going to talk about the patriarch Abraham, found in Genesis, Abram turned Abraham, and see how God called him and what that looked like for him to serve in that place. And then we're also going to give some time for you to think about your journey and how you have received or not yet received God's call and what that looks like. So before we get into all of that, I just wanted to share this graphic with you. Pull out your glasses if you need them. I think I need some right now. So we're all on the same page about what we're talking about when I say comfort zone or growth zone. And there are certain things on here that we will talk about and some that we will not. But basically, the comfort zone, my personal favorite, we all love that, right? It says, where you feel safe and in control. Anyone else like to feel in control? Yes. So that's where most of us start. That's where like humans like to live, right? We like our buildings to be like climate controlled, so we're comfortable. We like our cars to be like have comfy seats, so we're comfortable. We like the comfort zone. We like to hang out with people we know because it's comfortable. So that's the comfort zone, pretty self-explanatory. We all like to live in it, I'm pretty sure. But the goal, like I said, is we're looking to get into that growth zone, that outer layer. And so to get through the comfort zone, from the comfort zone to the growth zone, we have to go through these two other zones called the fear zone and the learning zone. The fear zone is where you find excuses, you lack confidence, you question your ability, and we're going to kind of lump that into the calling phase of what we talk about this morning, and I think you'll be able to see some of that fear zone reflected in my story especially. And then you get to the learning zone, which is where you start to deal with those challenges and problems. You acquire new skills, and your comfort zone is starting to grow because you're becoming more comfortable because you've learned some stuff. And so this is somewhere in the area of calling, somewhere between calling and growth zone. And we'll definitely see this in the story of Abram as he goes through a lot of, goes into unknown places and has to make unexpected decisions. And so Abram is a good example of pushing through and being in the learning zone on the way to the growth zone. And then we have the green growth zone. You find your purpose, you set new goals, you live your dreams. And I would like to just make an addendum to that for the sake of this sermon. I'm going to say the growth zone is also where we live God's dreams for us. God's dreams for the world by us serving him and coming alongside him in the mission, and God's dreams for us of who he wants us to be and how he wants us to be living. So those are the things we're going to be referencing, mostly the comfort zone and the growth zone. If you hear me talking about the calling or that phase, that kind of encapsulates the fear and the learning zone as well. So we're going to go back in time once again, first the Twilight Zone show, now this, to the year 2012. I know, it's going back. Some of you were barely born, some of you can barely remember 2012, but that's okay. This was my senior year of high school, and this was my comfort zone. So here's a picture of me in youth group. This particular picture was taken at Creation Fest, if you remember. That no longer exists, but this, I believe, was in 2010. So this is just one picture to kind of summarize what I was doing, where I was at that time. So that's just a handful of people from my youth group, my youth pastor in the back middle there. I got to spend a week or however many days that was at Creation. Like, you're with people who all believe the same thing as you, you're having a great time, everyone, like, someone cooks you food, you're just doing whatever you want, it's great. Like, being in high school, high schoolers appreciate what you have, okay? This is the comfort zone. You don't know it, but this is the comfort zone. So I'm attending church, I'm going to youth group, the boy I like in our youth group liked me back, like, oh, everything is so great, right? I have friends in my classes at school. We all take this, like, we're all in all the same classes because we're honors classes. I got to do, like, trips to New Orleans and Washington, D.C. with my quiz bowl team, with my Bible quizzing team. We got to go to Florida and California. So, like, everything's going really well. I'm really enjoying it. My youth pastor was super encouraging, like, always made time to talk to me, just was a cool person. I was really enjoying everything that was going on in life for the most part in high school. I'm sure there were days that were not great, but looking back, you're like, oh, that was a pretty good time. It was in my comfort zone, right? What about Abraham? Do you ever think about what Abraham was doing before God called him to move? I kind of think the first thing we usually hear about when we think about Abraham is God told Abraham to go and he went, but what was he doing beforehand? Did he have a comfort zone? So we're going to open up our Bibles to Genesis 11. And you can start there and then kind of just keep it open. We'll follow the story of Abraham for a few more chapters here. The truth is, there isn't a lot recorded about what Abraham was doing beforehand. He kind of just jumps into the story and then becomes a really main character. But if we look back, we can get just a little context of where we are in God's narrative in general. So chapter 11, this is after the flood, right? After Noah and his family were the only ones who survived and came off the ark. Noah has three sons, and it outlines the lineage of that family starting in verse 10. We're not going to read all of those, don't worry. So we have the lineage of Noah's three sons, which ends with Terah, who is Terah's family line is Abraham's family line. So Terah is Abram's father. And we see in verse 27, Terah became the father of Abram, Nahor, and Haran became the father of Lot. While his father Terah was still alive, Haran died in Ur of the Chaldeans in the land of his birth, and Abram and Nahor both got married. The name of Abram's wife was Sarai. The name of Nahor's wife was Milcah. She was the daughter of Haran, the father of both Milcah and Iscah. Now Sarah was childless because she was not able to conceive. Terah took his son Abram, his grandson Lot, son of Haran, and his daughter-in-law Sarai, the wife of his son Abram, and together they set out from Ur of the Chaldeans to go to Canaan. But when they came to Haran, they settled there. Terah lived 205 years, and he died in Haran. So, why did I just read all of those names and things? Not very well. Well, the point is that this family, it's laying out, why does the Bible even include those? Like, oh, this is where the family was, this is what they did, this is everybody. Well, family, even more so than it is now, family in that time was a big deal. Your tribe, your like lineage was super important. And what's crazy, it says Terah lived 205 years and then died. Do you realize Abraham was living like near with his family at that time? Like, can you imagine being 70 years old and you're like living with your parents and your dad's 205? Like, what in the world? But that was normal then, right? That was his comfort zone. He is together with his family unit. That's kind of how they always did it. They, like, were living together. When they decided to move, they all pick up and move together. Like, their extended family is a family unit. That's what they did, and that is all they knew. So you could say that that was what Abram's comfort zone was. He was living with his family. We don't know if they were shepherds or what they were doing, but that was kind of all he had known. Even if anyone in the family moved, they all kind of moved together. That was what they did. And so you might find yourself asking, well, what's really the problem with that? Like, why couldn't Abram just keep living with his family, and what's really the matter? The problem with that is your comfort zone is great to be comfortable, but as author John Asraf says, a comfort zone is a beautiful place, but nothing grows there, right? If we're saying there's a growth zone where beautiful things happen, the comfort zone is not that place. So let's continue on in Genesis and see how God shakes things up a little bit, what he asks Abram to do, and this is when we're getting into the calling section. So we're just going to read chapter 12, verse 1. The Lord said to Abram, "Go from your country, your people, and your father's household to the land I will show you." So this is like a pretty clear call from God. Don't you wish all calls from God were just that clear? Like, go do this. It does say to the land I will show you. So there's a little ambiguity. But he obviously hears the voice of God. Like, he knows it's God. The Lord is saying to him, go do this. And it lists three things that he's giving up. Leave your country. So if you think about the country you live in, America, right? This would be God saying, like, okay, leave the people who speak the same language as you do. Leave what you're used to. So that's one thing to give up, right? You're leaving your country, that familiarity. You're leaving your people. So whether that's, like, you know, your tribe, your religious, like, band of people that you're with. And then leave your father's household. So you're no longer with your immediate family. You're striking out kind of on your own. You're becoming this new family, this new thing. So God gives him three different things that are showing things that he's going to leave behind as he travels to follow the call of God and to serve God as God wants him to. And so as we think about what it looks like to serve God and to get out of our comfort zone, I don't want this sermon to be like me as a staff member standing up here and being like, and I'm calling you that you should go serve in children's ministry. Like, I will. I probably literally called you on the phone. I don't know. I might have. But the point of this sermon is that God does call people. And so what I want us to think about as we read through these scriptures is to learn what it looks like when God calls his people, what he requires of them, what he asks of them when he asks them to serve, and then what does it look like to obey him, what can we expect along the way, and then how do we do it? How do we live a life of faithful service after we respond to God's call? Because we saw, to get from the comfort zone to the growth zone, there's some stuff that you have to go through. And so I think Abraham and hopefully my story will be helpful in just kind of showing what this might look like in real life and giving us some pointers in how we can get from point A to point B. So the first thing to remember, he was called by God. Like, there's usually this call involved in serving. And what this call meant for Abraham was that, okay, Genesis 12. So in case you like to know, he started in Ur with his family. And then his family traveled to Haran, so that's up at the top. And then Haran is where he was called by God. And then it outlines a little bit more of his journey, which we'll talk a little bit more through later. But that's Abram's call. But what really God's call to Abram required him to do was to leave behind his preferences. God said, listen, I want you to leave your family, your country, your homeland, and go to a land that I'm going to show you. God didn't say to Abraham, like, hey, could we meet up on Tuesday and talk about your 5-year plan? And then maybe we can, like, you know, make some modifications, or we can compromise. Or he didn't say, like, hey, I've been considering relocating you. What area of the Mesopotamian Fertile Crescent are you most interested in abiding? Like, he didn't really ask. He didn't really say, hey, you let me know, and then we'll work together on it. God said, hey, I have this plan, and I want you to be the one who does it, so please do this. We don't really have the backstory of how long it took, like, Abraham and his wife to talk about it, or if his family tried to dissuade him, or if there's this internal monologue in his brain. We don't see any of that. We just see, so Abraham obeyed God and went. He didn't say, I just moved a couple of years ago, actually. Like, I'd rather not pack it all up again, right? His dad literally just moved their whole family. And then a couple years later, God's like, hey, let's do it again. He didn't say, you know what? Like, 75 is pretty old. I don't really feel like walking all those miles at 75. He didn't say, like, I don't really have the spiritual gift of relocation, God. I'm not really sure that that's my thing. Right? He just said, okay, God, you want me to? I'm going to do it. So, Genesis 12, God called him, and he gives promises in there that says, I will make you great. I will make you a great nation. And we get to verse 4. So Abram went as the Lord had told him, and Lot went with him. So he got to keep some of his family. That was nice. Abram was 75 years old when he set out from Haran. He took his wife, his nephew, and all the possessions they'd accumulated, and the people they'd acquired, and they set out for the land of Canaan and arrived there. So, what I want you to remember from this part of this passage is that sometimes we have to leave behind our preferences to serve. I think this is what we see in the story of Abram. I think he would have been happy to continue with his family, where his family was, with people who spoke his language, who believed the same things he did. But when God said go, he said, all right, we're going. And so I think that's something that may happen to us too, as we, if we truly want to be available to serve God. I think sometimes it means leaving behind our preferences. To go back to my story for a second, I said life was great. I was loving youth group. I was loving high school, everything. Things were good. Until I wasn't loving youth group as much. And if you've heard my testimony, you might have heard me share a little bit about this. But during my senior year of high school, there was a short period where I didn't want to go to youth group anymore, and I like skipped a few weeks, and my youth pastor was like, hey, what are you doing? Where have you been? And I was like, you know, I'm not really getting anything out of it. Like, it's kind of boring. I kind of already know all the stuff, which is like the worst attitude to have probably. But I was like, and there were some like freshman girls, no offense, freshman girls, but I'm a senior, right? And there's these freshman girls that are just kind of like clinging to me when I come in the door, and I'm like, this is not why I come here. This is my space, and now you're messing up my space, right? And so I was not really enjoying it. So I was like, if I don't enjoy it, I don't really need to come here. Like, it's not my thing. And my youth pastor asked me, hey, where have you been? Like, what are you doing? And I said, yeah, I'm not really enjoying it. Like, I just don't want to come. And honestly, this is probably a critical point for me that kind of set me on the trajectory and got me to where I am now. But he says, Melita, maybe, like, I really still think you should come to youth group, but probably you should come with a different mindset. And instead of coming and being like, great, what can I get out of it? Maybe you can come with a mindset of, how can I use this time to serve God by loving other people? He said, hey, if these freshman girls are coming up to you and annoying you, well, maybe that's an opportunity to love them. What would God have for you to do with these freshman girls or say to them? So he really challenged me to come, not for myself, but to come viewing it as an opportunity to serve. And that was definitely outside of my comfort zone at that time, because I don't know, you want to enjoy the thing that you're doing in your free time. You want it to be something that you can get something out of. But that was a challenge that I needed, and that was actually really good for me. And it was that challenge that kind of shifted my mindset and kind of became the catalyst for starting a conversation of, hey, should I get involved in ministry, or what might that look like? And so lots of conversations with my youth pastor. I did a few internships. He gave me opportunities to lead lessons, all sorts of stuff. And that was really cool. But eventually, you still have to like pull the trigger and make a decision, right? Like, what college are you going to? What are you majoring in? What's your life going to be about? And so one of my biggest things at this time, you'll see this is where the fear zone, like, excuses come into play. One of my biggest things was, excuse me, God, have you seen the other youth pastors in the world? I've noticed some trends. Mostly they are men. Not so much. Mostly they are athletic. Not so much. Mostly they're super charismatic and funny, and I'm not sure if this is a good fit, God, and you might be like, I don't know if if you called the wrong person or if we heard it wrong. Like, I'm not sure. I wasn't sure if I was called. Other people thought I was called. You know, have you ever been there? Like, they think you're called and you're like, So, also, youth pastors, quintessential cool guy, right? Like, I told you before, I was taking trips with my quiz bowl team, okay? Like, I don't think being on the, like, quiz bowl team and the math club, like, I don't think that qualifies you to be the quintessential cool person. I like sleep. God, youth pastors have to do all-nighters. Like, are you sure that I should be a youth pastor? Because I'm probably, you can ask, my parents are here, you can ask them. Like, if I came home from an all-nighter, was I friendly to be around? I don't think so. So, God, there's all these things that, like, I'm not really sure if you did the math right. I'm not sure how these pieces are going to come together. And the one thing I remember my youth pastor saying to me in these conversations was, well, you know, no one's really capable or ready or whatever when it comes to ministry, but God will equip you. You may have heard the saying, he doesn't call the equipped, he equips the called, right? And so that was kind of my youth pastor's challenge of, yeah, no, you're not going to be good enough. You're not going to be whatever, like, because it's not about you. And so, again, just encouraging me to step into what God was calling me to, even though there were some fear and there were some unknowns in that. And so, over time, I accepted that call of God, kind of confirmed by others, confirmed by experiences using my gifts and seeing that I did have those gifts and skills. And so I said yes to taking that step of faith and becoming a youth ministry major at Lancaster Bible College. And so it truly was a step of faith. In that calling zone, that fear zone, there is unknowns, but you take that step of faith. And I think that's what we see Abram/Abraham doing as well. So if we go back to Genesis 12, chapter 12, verse 6, this is him starting to actually travel and follow God and live out what God is asking him to do. So I'm going to read a few different excerpts from 12 and 13, but this is what I want you to listen for. Abram is starting to get into this growth zone. And so as I read, I want you to identify two things. I want you to think about what are the challenges he's facing. We said there's decisions to make, there's unknowns, there's difficulties. So what are those things that Abram encounters in what I'm about to read? And then the second thing that I want you to look for is there a pattern in the way that he responds to those things? So what are the challenges? How does he respond to them? And do you see a pattern emerging in that? So Genesis 12, 6 to 9. Abram traveled through the land and as far as the site of the great tree of Moreh at Shechem. At that time, the Canaanites were in the land. The Lord appeared to Abram and said, to your offspring I will give this land. So, side note, the Canaanites were in the land. Canaanites were like an enemy of the Israelites, right? And God's like, hey, this is your land. Well, there's also a whole other nation dwelling here right now. So that's kind of that would not be my preferred scenario, right? If we said he had to give up some preferences, I'm not really trying to live in a land with my enemies. So we see here again, he has to give up his preference, but he's following God. Okay, we're in this land. But the Lord comes to him and he says, I will give this land to your offspring. So Abram built an altar there to the Lord who had appeared to him. From there, he went on toward the hills of East Bethel and pitched his tent with Bethel on the west and Ai on the east. And there he built an altar to the Lord and called on the name of the Lord. Then Abram set out and continued toward the Negev. Then the next section. Now there was a famine in the land, and Abraham went down to Egypt to live there for a while because the famine was so severe. So he just got settled somewhere, and then it's like, actually, there's a famine here, so let's head somewhere else. Probably not what he preferred doing. And then we don't have time to get into it, but in Egypt, he faces a bunch more challenges. He makes some poor decisions out of fear. You can read that for yourself later with his wife and Pharaoh and all of that. But this is the fear zone, the learning zone. There's stuff going on, there's challenges, and he doesn't always get it right. But we see that then he starts to come back, and we'll pick up the story when he comes back from Egypt and see how he continues to follow God there. Chapter 13, verse 1. So Abram went up from Egypt to the Negev with his wife and everything he had, and Lot went with him. He'd become very wealthy in livestock and silver and gold. And he came to Bethel, to the place between Bethel and Ai, where his tent had been earlier, and where he had first built an altar. There, Abram called on the name of the Lord. Now Lot, who was moving with Abraham, had lots of flocks and herds, and the land couldn't support them all. So here they are. I'm just summarizing because we're running out of time. But basically, another chance for Abraham to give up his preferences, right? Here we are. This land isn't big enough for the both of us, whatever. And so he says, Lot, you choose where you want to go, and then I'll take the other direction. So Lot chooses, like, obviously the really good, lush pasture lands, yay. And then Abram's like, all right, I'll go the other way. It'll be fine. So Abraham gives up his preferences once again, and then he kind of settles down, and we see in verse 18, he went to live near the great tree of Mamre at Hebron, where he pitched his tents, and there he built an altar to the Lord. All right, did we hear any challenges in Abram's journey? Raise your hand if you heard anything that you thought would be challenging. Okay. Did we recognize a pattern of his response to the challenges? Anybody? When I read this, in 1.5 chapters, the thing that stood out to me was, so within 1.5 chapters of the Bible, he built 3 different altars. And I was like, this man is spending a lot of time building altars. What is the point of that? And what struck me is that as he was following God, as he was living this life of obedience and service, it wasn't just about him and doing what he needed to do. He could only do this because he was recognizing God's presence with him all along the way. And so I put here his growth zone really goes all the way through the rest of his life, through Genesis 25. But when we see Abraham's growth zone, we see that how he got through that, maybe the tip that he would give us is to focus on God's presence with you as you're going through those unfamiliar things, as you're hitting that growth zone. Because what's the point of an altar? Well, an altar literally in the Old Testament was somewhere where you slaughtered sacrifices, right? Like you put to death one thing in accordance with aligning yourself with God. So maybe these altars are moments to meet with God. Some of them are moments to just remember what God has done, where God has been in his life in the past. Some of them include making covenants with God. But he's setting up these altars, and each time, that's a conversation, that's a commitment between him and God being renewed. That's his perspective, being focused on God's presence with him. So we learn that we need to leave behind our preferences. We learn that the secret to actually getting anywhere in the growth zone, the secret to making it through, is to focus on God's presence with you as you serve. And so I just wanted to share a few ways that I have seen God's presence in the growth zone in my life. And so if you know me, you know I love dogs. So this is me on a mission trip in Kentucky. But honestly, I was probably more, it might surprise some of you, but I was probably more of like, you know, the introvert person who at a party just pets the dog instead of talking to the people. Like, that's honestly why I put that picture there. Like, oh, it was my comfort zone to hang out with the dogs, not the humans, right? So how do you get from a person who hangs out with the dogs, not the humans, to a person who's in the middle of this mass of humanity in a gym game, standing on chairs? I don't know what the game's called. But that's me, right there. How does that happen? I'm telling you, that can only be God's presence, right? God working in the situation. So how have I seen God working in my life, working in me in the growth zone? I think I've learned to rely on God like I never had to before. Prayer has become a much bigger part of my life, following God's call into ministry. I've seen many answered prayers and God providing the right leaders at the right time to join our team. Some even before I asked them, like they would come to me because God was stirring something in them to serve. We see people from our youth group doing gap years in ministry or pursuing ministry as a career or just finding their own church to participate in after high school. And so all of these things are God moving in the midst of my fear or uncertainty, or those times when I am able to say yes and obey him well. And perhaps one of my favorite just evidences of God being at work is that recently in youth group, we were playing a game of knockout in the gym, and guess who was the champion? So, if you were wondering if God still does miracles, yes. But the point is, what is the point? Okay, we're supposed to leave the comfort zone, we're supposed to get to the growth zone. Is it worth it? Like, why? Why do we do all that? Well, the point is to glorify God and to further his kingdom in the world, right? And I believe that God can do that however he needs to. Like, if you're not going to cooperate, he doesn't necessarily need you to do that. But I believe that there is a blessing and a reward involved when we're part of what God is doing in the world. And so Abram's reward, we see kind of two parts of the reward. We see God saying, I will make you a great nation. And finally, after years and years of waiting, he sees his son be born. And he sees that start to take place. But then we also see in Hebrews 11, it says, you know, he never really received what was promised. He was looking forward to a different city. He's looking forward to a reward and a blessing from God that is beyond this earth, beyond anything that he could experience. But we're promised in Hebrews 11 that God rewards those who earnestly seek him. And so why do we step out of our comfort zone? Why do we serve God? We don't only do it for the reward. We do it because we're called to do it. We do it because God's mission in the world is accomplished by us. But as we focus on leaving behind what our preferences, and as we focus on his presence with us as we serve, we know that there will also be a reward, whether we see that now or whether that is an eternal reward. That is just a reality. There is a blessing when you choose to serve God. So I would like to invite up Ron Granko to share just a little bit about the journey he has been on maybe in the past year of calling and fear zone and growth zone and all that good stuff. So I'll give that to you. So Ron, if you can tell us first, just what would you consider your comfort zone, or what are things that you're involved with here that are like you?
My comfort zone is, I'm an introvert, so I like reading, walking in the woods, one-on-one conversations.
Okay, so I didn't hear you say sitting around a table with a group of young adults.
That's not my comfort zone.
Okay.
Nor is this, by the way.
There you go. Another example. You serve our church in a couple different ways. What are some of those ways that you were already involved with our church?
I'm on the church board. I teach the learning groups on Sunday mornings. I help with communion, and I help with fair parking. Go fair parking.
Woo! So you already had stuff you were doing in our church, right? Mm-hmm. Like, it's not like you weren't doing anything. And then somehow you got involved in young adult ministry for a season. How did that come about, or it's not like you were just looking for something to do, right?
Right. It wasn't any kind of mystical call. It was more rational than that. The church has had an emphasis on intergenerational events, and so it was a combination of that and just recognizing the need. Gen Y and Gen Z have really had a hard decade, I think. And so there was, I recognized a need for help with that generation, young adults.
So maybe there wasn't an explicit calling from God, but there was a sense of a need, and you, because you're just a nice guy and are trying to serve God's church, decided, hey, I think I could step in there.
Yeah, basically.
Okay. So if that wasn't your preference, how do you feel that you were pushed or maybe forced to grow during that time?
Well, for one thing, it's a little uncomfortable being an older individual to walk into a class of young people. It's a reminder that I am no longer of that age. So that's a little uncomfortable.
Within that, I think, so I'll just speak from what you've told me before. Is that okay,
yeah,
too?
Yeah, sure.
So Ron would come to me and say, I don't think I'm good at this. I don't think, like, this isn't my thing. This isn't what I do. And I'm like, well, I don't think you really have to be good at it. I don't think you can really be bad at it. Like, can you talk to people? So Ron was over here thinking, I'm not good at this. I'm not good at this. And I'm like, Ron, I think that you're crushing it. I don't really know. So kind of just that internal struggle, too, of like, I know I want to do this to be helpful, but I'm not sure if this is something I can do. So you mentioned like being willing to risk failure, or having some courage to be able to just try it and see what happens.
Yeah, indeed. Risking failure is kind of a relative term. There is that fear that I'm not going to fit in or I'm not going to succeed. And I tend to be an impatient person, so I want to see immediate results.
So even within that, and You stuck it out for a while, even though you didn't think it was your thing, and I kept telling you, it really can be your thing. But have there been any perceived blessings or rewards from God, whether that's for you personally, a blessing you received, or how you saw God at work in the group? What have you seen?
Yeah, definitely. Well, first of all, my vision was really just to help restart the group, not to necessarily have it continue. So after about a year or so, I thought it's time to phase out. And one of the real blessings was seeing that intergenerational thing happen and seeing the relationships form. Jeff Erickson and Samuel Greenwalt and Jesse Myers. Just a real opportunity to see those relationships on an intergenerational level develop and flourish.
Awesome, thanks. And my last question for you, do you have any advice for someone who might be hesitant to try serving in a new area or feels like they could be needed or are being called but have some hesitancy?
Yeah, I would say do it. Don't be afraid. I think it really is an opportunity. So embrace the opportunity to grow, just as you've been talking about. It really is an opportunity.
Thanks, Ron. All right, so as we wrap up, you can give him a round of applause. So as we wrap up, the question I just want to leave you with, oh, there's Ron, okay. The question I want to leave you with is, what zone are you in? Are you in the comfort zone? Are your ears even open to hearing the call of God or the call of someone helping God call you? Are you living in the fear zone? Are you making excuses or lacking confidence because you think you have to rely on yourself for service? Or are you ready to enter the growth zone? Are you willing to give up your preferences and to follow God, relying on his presence as he leads you into a new area of serving? So you can think on that, and I will pray for us, and I would, invite you to just consider, which zone are you in and where might God be calling you to? Let's pray. God, as you revealed yourself to Abraham, I pray that you would reveal yourself to us this morning. And as you moved him to venture beyond the places and people and lands that he was familiar with, I pray that you would move us to venture beyond our comfort zones and beyond our own preferences in pursuit of your mission for the good of ourselves, for the good of the church, but ultimately for your glory and the furthering of your kingdom. God, as you used Abraham to accomplish your mission in his world, pray that you would use us. God, we open our minds and our hearts, and we release our tendency to cling to our comfort at all costs. We ask that you'll meet us here with a renewed sense of call, of your call for us to take part in your mission at EBIC and in the world. Amen.